From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. $38 billion, $73 billion, or somewhere in between. It's a pretty wide range when we're talking about the true budget deficit California is facing. No matter what it is significant, and it's a 180 from a record surplus through the early pandemic years. Next month, Governor Newsom will present an updated budget for the fiscal year. It's also known as the May revise. But last week, his office announced a deal on an early action plan that shaves off $17 billion. Newsom and Democratic leaders in the state legislature, they call it a major step to address this shortfall, while critics call the plan a swing and a miss. Joining us now to talk about this new action plan and what it may signal in future budget negotiations is Alexei Kossoff, who reports on state politics for the nonprofit newsroom CalMatters, which partners with public media stations like Cap Radio across the state. Hey, Alexei.
Hello, good afternoon.
So let's start to the beginning, just with a quick recap. How did we get to this budget shortfall?
Right. Well, it's been a lot of up and down over the last few years. You may remember we were riding pretty high on the budget for a long time, and then the pandemic hit. It seemed like we were going to be facing tens of billions of dollars in a deficit. And the economy actually recovered much more quickly than we expected, and California was suddenly facing a $100 billion surplus. And what happened is the state got so excited about that money that they promised a lot of it to all kinds of great programs, all kinds of grand ideas, and then things started turning south again. And so we've got a situation where the state put forward all these spending plans, and then the revenue has not quite come through to live up to that. And so we're facing this potentially huge number because the state got too excited and then the economy has softened.
And why does California have these volatile pendulum swings when it comes to the budget?
Right. So California is a state that has what we would call a progressive tax policy. And that means that they put higher taxes on wealthier individuals. We are very, very dependent on income taxes and specifically capital gains taxes, which come from what wealthy people are earning in the stock market. And California, you know, they like to say that when the economy catches, you know, when the economy sneezes, California catches a cold, right? That every kind of swing in the national economy is felt even more deeply in California because we are very, very dependent on what happens with the wealthiest people. And so when there was this downturn in the stock market last year that hit California disproportionately hard and opened up a big gap, and then also things like, you know, the struggles of the technology industry right now. I mean, California is the home base of that. There's been tons of layoffs. There hasn't been a lot of high-profile IPOs. That's having an impact. So there's a lot of reasons, you know, that California right now is actually doing a lot worse than most of the rest of the country in terms of the budgetary picture.
And these projected budgets, they evolve, they shape shift. But even with what we have now, it is a wide range. You have $38 billion. That's from the Department of Finance. That's the governor's office's like fiscal analyst arm. But then you also have potentially $73 billion when you're talking about a shortfall, and that comes from the Legislative Analyst Office, the LAO. How can these numbers be so far apart?
Right. Well, I mean, we really should emphasize all of this is just an estimate. It's, you know, it's them looking at the numbers, projecting out a year or more in advance how they expect the revenue to look. And so this is all really just an educated guess. And that's how you end up with a situation where you can have a $100 billion surplus and a $73 billion deficit potentially, right? You know, we'll have a better picture in May after a lot of that tax revenue comes in, you know, in the next couple weeks as people are filing their taxes. And hopefully the state will be in a better position to figure out how to proceed forward. But, you know, the real struggle here and, you know, the difference in mindset between the Department of Finance and the LAO, as you mentioned, is that they're not quite sure, like, how bad is this structural deficit going to be going forward? How weak is the economy going to be in the years ahead? And how much of, you know, a hole is California looking at just years and years and years in the future that we're going to have to dig our way out of?
Yeah, and it is important to remind people last year there was this anomaly that took place due to atmospheric rivers in January. There was emergency declarations and a majority of counties across California. That delayed potentially when they could actually file their taxes. It wasn't April. It got delayed to
October, November. Yeah.
So that really impacts how you can project and make an educated guess of what you're looking at with the state budget. So last week, there was a development. There was an early action budget package that was announced. I think it was on Thursday. So how has this developed?
So this is something that the governor has been asking for since January, and the legislature has been, you know, kind of thinking about it, thinking about what they want to do. I think everybody was probably trying to push it off a little bit, fingers crossed, hoping that the economy would turn around, but it hasn't quite gotten to where they want it to be. So they did take this step and finally agree, you know, this is a package of things we can do that's kind of the low-hanging fruit, quote-unquote, the simplest things that where we can clear out a bunch of stuff. And then going into this typical budget process that happens throughout May and June, ahead of the next fiscal year in July, they'll focus on the really hard questions that they have to ask about how they're going to deal with that deficit. So this package, I mean, it pulls back certain unspent money that was previously sent out to departments and programs or promised. It pulls some kind of budgetary tricks of shifting around funds from one program to another, pushing off paying state workers by, you know, a couple of days so that it can be pushed from one budget year to the next, all different kinds of things, right? Because at the end of the day, the state just needs to say that its ledger is balanced and it doesn't really have a lot of rules around how it does that. And, you know, there's things here that, you know, they're going to have somewhat of an impact on some things. Like there's some climate programs that people were really looking forward to that are getting cut and stuff like that. But it's not the most severe stuff. And I should really emphasize that, you know, May and June is when those really difficult discussions are going to be happening around that.
What are the next steps for this current package? When will state lawmakers vote on this?
So it's coming up today for the first round of hearings, you know, for it kind of to get that public airing out, that transparency around what's in there. And then we're expecting on Thursday it'll come up for a vote in the legislature and go right to the governor to be signed. You know, there's a lot of eagerness to show that they're working on this, given how big of a deficit we are facing. They're really, I think, under pressure from the public to be taking this seriously. And so even though, you know, this kind of stuff, I mean, it could have waited, you know, until the whole budget package, but they wanted to push it up and do it sooner to signal to the public that this is a serious issue that they're taking seriously.
Yeah, and that's Governor Newsom along with Democratic leaders. What do Republican state lawmakers have to say about this?
Right. So it was not, you know, that well received from the Republicans, though they don't have the votes to do much about it. They're, you know, a super minority in the legislature, and the budget package only requires a simple majority. But they did make clear that A, they're very unhappy to be kind of left out of the process. I mean, this is something that was totally negotiated behind closed doors between the governor and the Democratic leadership of the legislature. So it only reflects their priorities. And, you know, they also stated that they felt like it relied on a lot of gimmicky solutions that aren't going to get to the core problems of why California has a deficit in the first place. As I said, some of this is just deferring money. It's just delaying funding programs by a couple years, saying, well, we'll get back to it in the future when we have the funding. So who knows? Maybe we'll never have that funding, right? It's not really dealing with those things in making a difficult decision of saying we won't do that at all. And I think, you know, their point is that this is, it looks responsible on paper, but it's not an actual solution.
And we're talking about $17 billion and change that they're projecting they'll be able to cut down from the shortfall. But even if you take the most conservative budget shortfall at $38 billion from the Department of Finance, it's not even half of the shortfall. So what are you going to be following in the next month or two, because this is really crunch time, about those cuts that are going to have to be made?
Absolutely. California, and you know, it fortunately does have a pretty strong reserve, you know, budgetary reserve right now.
And the rainy day fund.
The rainy day fund and other reserve funding that the state has built up over the past decade or so. And Legislative leaders and Newsom agreed to tap into up to half of that money, which I think they said could cut it down by another maybe $12 billion or so. So even with the most, you know, optimistic projections about that deficit, that's still, you know, $10, $12 billion more they need to figure out, right? That could mean, you know, some pretty painful cuts for, you know, welfare programs, for state universities, for courts, for, you know, all the kinds of things that faced these cuts a decade plus ago during the Great Recession. There's ideas that are floating out there. There hasn't been stuff that's been agreed to yet. And I think you're going to see over that next 2 months, as we're coming toward these deadlines, there's going to be a lot of lobbying at the Capitol. You know, I would expect to see groups coming up there trying to make the case for why their programs are important and why they need to be preserved, even in the face of, you know, this difficult financial situation. You know, we're already seeing that. Some colleagues of mine have written about, for example, there's some, you know, kind of supplementary welfare programs that the state created in the last few years when things were more flush that are on the line to be, you know, shut down early, basically, and they'll pull back the remaining funding. And, you know, there's already been advocates at the Capitol at hearings sort of saying, this is so important to me. This is how this turned around my life. Please don't shut this down. Please don't cut this. And it makes it very real how you know, difficult the situation is, you know, in a human way, that this is money in a ledger, and it's also people's lives.
Yeah. I mean, from one budget year to another budget year, one thing is uniform. You have people that are saying their case, fighting for their case to get funding. But I would imagine that dynamic is drastically different when you have a surplus year and you're fighting for that money. And that fight is different when you're facing a deficit of tens of billions of dollars.
Right. And what the state has tried to do over the last few years is primarily put that surplus money into one-time spending so that you aren't facing this obligation year after year, year after year to keep a program going. But it hasn't solely done that. It has expanded the social safety net. For example, I mean, very publicly and proudly, the state expanded, you know, healthcare access to undocumented adults in the last year. And you know, that's billions of dollars that the state now needs to come through, you know, to keep its promise. And so I would imagine that's going to be something that's coming up at the Capitol. I wouldn't expect that the Democrats and the legislature are going to undo that, but I would expect to hear a lot from Republicans saying, well, you made this promise to, you know, people who aren't even citizens, and yet you can't keep your promises for X or Y or Z other thing, right? There's going to be a lot of politicking. There's going to be a lot of, I think, concern around, you know, the optics of what they choose to cut and what they choose to keep. That's why you're seeing with some of these early cuts, they're focused on things like climate programs and transit funding. State departments are getting their funding cut because those are things that I think maybe don't feel quite as personal to people in the same way as these programs that might more directly affect their lives.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about welfare programs, I mean, those are people who are in dire situations. So there, of course, is a human cost and a human toll that is felt. When we talk about the rainy day fund, I remember when covering Governor Brown, when he talked about, you know, his budget process, his May revise, there was the piggy bank and, you know, and his diagram about, you know, wanting to throw money into this. So we now have that money now. If they do pull from the rainy day fund, has that been done in this sizable of a way in the past decade?
Not until the pandemic was it even talked about as an idea. You know, this was a very extended period of economic growth and surpluses in California history. We were, you know, we were lucky for a long time. But as you said, Governor Brown was always warning that downturn was just around the corner. And, you know, during the pandemic, there was discussion about tapping into those rainy day funds. And then because there was so much federal aid and because the economy recovered so much more quickly than expected, they didn't end up actually having to follow through with those plans. So now what you're looking at is going to be really the first substantial time of the state dipping in and using those reserve funds to backfill a huge gap. And, you know, it's in the law that the state can only use up to half of that money the first year. And so it sounds like they want to actually go all the way and use half that money the first year. And, you know, that could really help this time, but we're looking at ongoing deficits for several more years at least after that. And that, you know, backup plan is not going to be there for them forever in the future.
How much is in the rainy day fund?
So I think it's something like there's several. Rainy day fund is the main reserve, but there are several others. Like there's a one for K-12 education and one for, you know, welfare programs. So in total, I think it's more than $30 billion now that is in all of these reserve accounts. You know, it could make a substantial dent into a deficit, but if it really is as large as the LAO is predicting, if it's really $73 billion, then even if we get $15 billion out of our reserves, that's just a fraction of the problem.
Who are the budget watchdogs at the state capitol?
I think, you know, you have a mix of, I mean, certainly reporters are there trying to keep their eyes on what's happening. And, you know, I would encourage anybody who's really interested in following this stuff to read CalMatters and a lot of other great outlets that are following along. But, you know, everyone is kind of there for their own interest in a way. There are organizations that, you know, like the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association that are sort of preaching fiscal responsibility, but they are coming from their own perspective as well, which is, you know, wanting, you know, fewer taxes and, you know, fiscal responsibility from a very particular kind of perspective. So I would just say everyone is coming from their perspective about what they think the right solution to a budget problem is. And you've got, you know, unions and big, powerful interest groups that are going to be there fighting to protect the programs that affect them. And then, you know, I think that kind of noise is going to drown out, you know, the folks who may be pushing for longer term solutions. It's very hard when you've got 120 people who are voting on this thing across the Senate and the Assembly. It's hard to bring together enough voices and votes to make any kind of long term change to how the state funds itself. Even in good times. I mean, we've known about this boom and bust cycle for decades. People have been talking about ideas where we could have a more stable funding source than income taxes. And there's just not the political will to do that because California, as a heavily Democratic state, really does favor pulling more taxes from wealthier people.
Finally, Alexi, I mean, this is a busy time for you. So there's the May revise. What are the other deadlines that lawmakers have to meet?
So it's important for people who want to keep track of this. In early May is when we will hear that governor's revised plan accounting for the state tax revenue. And then from there, negotiations will really take off with the legislature, and the legislature has to pass a balanced budget by June 15th, or they don't get paid. And then the fiscal year takes effect on July 1st, so there's a little wiggle room there to make adjustments. But yeah, we're looking at about 2 months, you know, or 2 to 3 months where there's a lot of action that's going to be taking place.
It'll be here before we know it. Alexi, Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alexi Kossoff is a reporter for the nonprofit newsroom CalMatters, talking to us about some updates with how the governor and Democratic leaders at the state legislature are working to close a significant budget deficit, which can be anywhere from $38 billion to $73 billion. Up next, the debut episode of the new Food Network show Best Bite in Town aired last night, and it spotlighted the city of Davis. We'll have some restaurants who competed. They're going to join us about the experience. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.